This podcast is brought to you by Most Valuable Podcasts, leading the league in podcasting entertainment.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. This is the Fast Break Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me, as always, is Ricky Weaver.
What's up, guys?
And Dave Oster.
Hey, everybody.
And today we're talking about the NBA Finals. We're going to be previewing it, doing it a little bit differently. Usually we do, either one person or it would have been Dave and I doing a sit-down video in front of the green screen, but we're going to do it on the podcast because why not? What's a better
Give them an in-depth sight into it instead of a quick, you know, three-minute video.
Exactly.
You guys 20, need it.
25 minutes talking about the NBA Finals because we know we can do it. And then we're also going to be talking about CP3 possibly going to the Spurs. The Spurs want to bring him in, so we'll talk about that. And we're also going to be talking about Magic Johnson saying that Brandon Ingram is untouchable. And let's get into this final stock, because this is the matchup that, Ricky, you were saying before we even started that this was the most hyped matchup, because like Dave and I and you were saying that we were pretty much knew this was going to be the finals after last year's finals ended. We knew that we were going to get Golden State
in Cleveland.
I believe
in our preview video I said that just wake me up in June. Wake me up in June when the finals start, and then we'll be okay.
Well, it's starting on June 1st. we got the Cavs versus the Golden State Warriors for the third time. Warriors won the first one. We knew the whole story there, Kyrie and K-Love out. And then last year, obviously, I think 3-1. 3-1 lead? Does that sound familiar?
Anyone remember 3-1?
Anyways, so
the Cubs won.
We got 3-1. The 1-1. We got the Cubs did do that too. 1-1. We got the Warriors taking on the Cavs here. And the big question is, looking into this and looking at the start of it, who should be looked at as the favorite? Should it be the defending champs in the Cleveland Cavaliers, or should it be the loaded Golden State Warriors with the new addition of Kevin Durant?
I mean, how do you not favor Golden State after what they've done to
12-0
Western
in the playoffs? 12-0?
And 12-1 wasn't bad.
And not but convincing
you lost to the
fashion.
I know.
To be fair, every team they went up to, I think, had an injury, though, like Golden State. So, I mean, yeah, they might not face people at their best, but they still destroyed teams, and the margin was not even close. So the problem is, you know, all the talk about a league being balanced and level of competition, but adding Kevin Durant to one of the best teams, it breaks the West. It breaks the NBA.
One of the best teams already in history, and you add Kevin Durant, who's arguably, you know, second best player, third best player in the league, whoever you really have. I mean, obviously LeBron's number one. You have Kevin Durant not too far behind there in best rankings. Ricky, looking at this, who should be looked as his favorite? Should it be LeBron? I mean, he is the best player in the world.
I think it's the Warriors, and the reason why I say that is, not only on paper do I look at their team and I go, if I'm looking just on paper, I'm going with the Warriors because of everything they have. They have, to me, four superstars compared to only three of the Cavaliers, but also because of the fact that I know you said, oh, well, 12-1 isn't so bad, but the Cavaliers lost at home, a place where, like, once they were up 2-0, we're like, well, they're not going to lose a game. They lose to the Celtics without IT, who is arguably the Celtics' best player on their squad. They go ahead and lose. I know it was on a last-second shot, but you go ahead and lose to a Celtics team when the Warriors, like Dave said, except for one half when Kawhi was playing, they blew everyone out.
It was three quarters that Kawhi was playing, and if Kawhi finished that game out, they would have won that series, and there wouldn't be the 12-0 Warriors. And then also looking at the Cavs there, it was the regular season Cavs. They showed up, you know, they reared their ugly head coming back, and they showed that one game in Game 3. I mean,
arguably, though, the Celtics are a better team without Isaiah Thomas.
They are. I'm just saying. That's why I said arguably their best player.
But anyways, looking at this, I don't disagree with you. You look at the Warriors.
I was going to say, I don't disagree with you. The Celtics are better without IT.
The Warriors mowed through everybody. I don't disagree with you there. And you look at the Warriors. I mean, the addition of Kevin Durant. I think they should be favored. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were favored last year. They were favored the year before. I mean, it's nothing really has changed on the Cavs side. They added, you know, Kyle Korver. They added Darren Williams. They added Derek Williams, all these players, but they didn't really add a player like a Kevin Durant. And, you know, Kevin Durant creates so many different matchup problems. But then looking at this, you know, we see the Warriors as the favorite, but that doesn't mean that the Cavs have no shot. The Cavs definitely have a shot. Dave, looking at this matchup, what is the Cavs' best chance at beating the Warriors? So you're looking at this, you know, every single game, night in, night out, what's the way the Cavs should be attacking this Golden State offense, this Golden State defense? What should they really be looking at?
Honestly, defensively, their best bet is to continue to stifle Klay Thompson. He's a player who is very hot and cold, and he's been pretty cold throughout the whole playoffs consistently. So honestly, if they can make an effort to keep him quiet early on, I think it gives them their best chance. Matchup-wise, Kevin Durant can score when he wants to score. I don't care who's guarding him. Like, it's just fact at this point. He's taking less shots, but he's more efficient, and it's disgusting. Curry will make mistakes offensively, so if you let Kyrie pressure him, I'm pretty happy with that matchup still. The big question comes down to how much of a factor is Draymond Green going to be down low? And, I mean, we saw what he can do, not only down low, but also stretching the floor. When he got hot last year and just started nailing threes.
Well, that game seven for Draymond, I mean,
it was insane.
We talk about LeBron James' performances in game seven. I mean, Draymond was just outshadowed. Draymond wasn't too far from a triple-double in that game himself. Looking at defense, I think we saw a lot of exploitations. Even, just looking at that Celtics, with IT, without IT, you saw a lot of ball movement, and that hurt the Cavs. I mean, it's just something where there was so much ball movement that it hurt. And even Ty Lue saying that the Celtics are a harder team to defend than the Warriors. So, Ricky, taking that in, do you agree that defensively that's where the Cavs should be attacking, or are you looking more on Golden State side and saying that ball movement is going to be the key to, really exploiting this Cavs defense that people are saying is weak?
I think the biggest thing for the Cavaliers, and it's the weird thing about this is, the Cavaliers already know what they have to do, because even with KD, the biggest change from last year to this year, you still defend the Warriors the same way. They're still the same team at a core. To me, communication on the court is going to be their biggest thing, because you talk about ball movement, that's all the Warriors do, whether it's office screens, whether it's who's getting the ball, who's going what, who's screening, what do you have to do to change to it? You have to be perfect with your communication with each other and really anticipate, like, okay, this person's coming off a screen, I got to go with him. Both of us can't go with Zaza coming in because, oh, Steph Curry's wide open. And to me, I look at this Cavs team and LeBron's going to step up. I don't expect LeBron to get sick again and only put up 6 points. I say that because, Jordan dropped how many when he was sick, but no big deal. But he's going to show up. I expect Love and Kyrie to be there with him. It's all the role players. How is Kyle Korver's got to shoot well. If he shoots well from beyond the arc, that can kind of neutralize some threes that you're going to get on the Warriors side. Also, Deron Williams. What if LeBron has to come out again like he was in foul trouble? The Warriors are a team that, like you saw the Celtics when LeBron wasn't out there, yeah, they got up to a 16-point lead, but Kyrie neutralized it, and it was only a 10-point lead going to the half. The Warriors aren't going to let you neutralize it as much. They're a team that can flip the switch and go up from 10 to 25 in the blink of an eye.
So then taking in all that, I mean, obviously communication's big. Looking at LeBron James and the factor that he is, because you mentioned the 11-point game, not the 6-point game. Just saying, he didn't put up only 6 points. He put up 11.
I'm just saying, Jordan had a better sick performance.
Yeah, and right now LeBron's having one of the best postseasons ever.
I know. It's just a little stab, a little jab.
Yeah, well,
let me have it.
And I'm giving one back. but looking at LeBron, looking at what he's been able to do, I mean, we talk about the postseason, what he's been able to do so far. 32 points per game. You look at 8 rebounds per game, 7 assists per game. I mean, he's doing, 2.2 steals per game, 1.4 blocks per game. We know he's the greatest player on earth right now, shooting 56% from the field, 42% from three, putting up around nearly similar free throw averages around his career, shooting 71%. We know he's the best player on the floor, but is it enough this year with the addition of KD to be able to overcome this? Because we saw last year that those last three games LeBron took over. Yes, Kyrie was fantastic in those last three games as well, but you look at LeBron's performance on both the offensive side and defensive side, LeBron was unreal. We just kind of stopped arguing who's the best player in the world. Just now it's LeBron, and we know it's LeBron. We know not to question LeBron. So looking at this, how much is the LeBron factor, and does he really need to carry this team for the next 7, 6, 5 games, 4 games, whatever, how long it is, for the next couple games, because we know Kyrie can step up. We know K-Love has been stepping up recently, but then also, Kyrie in that last game twisted his ankle, and that looked wobbly. You look at K-Love, he's got back problems. So does LeBron really need to carry this team like he's done the past two finals?
Yes, and the reason why is I'm going to use last year's finals as the example. When you think back to last year, when I say 2016 NBA Finals, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
3-1 lead.
The first thing. That's not the first thing that comes to my mind. The one is the block.
I think it was a stupid meme of 3-1 lead.
The Iguodala block is the thing that I think of. And to kind of go with the question that you asked, that block alone, do you remember the beginning of that series when it got to 3-1? How we're like, man, this is kind of a this isn't the NBA Finals that we were thinking about. And then, boom, the last thing we remember is the Iguodala block. And oh, my God, this series was amazing.
First off, that series was amazing. Yep. Second of all.
Not when it was 3-1.
Yeah, and then you had the 3-1 comeback, and it was amazing. First off, I'm surprised that you didn't mention that Kyrie was the moment, because I know you were giving Kyrie a ton of shit, saying LeBron didn't take the final shot.
So, Ricky, like you were saying, as far as LeBron being that block being such a moment in the series, and that's what LeBron James can do. He can take over in one moment and change the way the game is going. He can kill all momentum for the other team. He can just become bigger than the game itself, almost on the floor, and in one snap second like that. And honestly, for me, that's why he is not just the stats, but his presence on the floor. He is one of the most commanding players. I think probably the most important guy on the court for any team, because normally you see coaches kind of being the guys who sway the momentum. They get the team, you know, back in momentum. They know when to stop the game. And that's the thing. He is the coach out there.
And you think Ty Lue's the coach.
He can do that on the fly.
And the GM.
And the GM and everything else.
And the mayor.
And the owner.
So, like, the importance of him being on the court and being able to do that, and him knowing that he's been through this situation before, he's been to the finals, he knows the matchup with the Warriors, I feel like it's almost an advantage that the Warriors lose out on because of Steve Kerr's health. Because Steve Kerr was such a smart head coach, and he knew how to do smart timeouts, great lineup rotations, and, you know, it was just extremely well-timed, and it was like, you look back and you're like, man, he knew, like, he didn't let it get out of hand. He knew exactly when to stop it, when to kill the other team's momentum. And LeBron James doing that on the court for the Cavs versus them missing out on Steve Kerr, I think it's not a direct matchup, but I feel like it really is.
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to get to real quick, because I was going to mention, who's the Warriors player that we should really be hooking us on. I mean, obviously, we look at the Cavs. It should be LeBron James, but I want to go to that point just because we ended up bringing it up. Steve Kerr, I forget when the last game he coached was. I think it was either the second game of that Portland series. Mm-hmm. It was right before the third or fourth, second game in the Portland series. Then Mike Brown took over. Hasn't coached since, and pretty much the reports are saying that it's nothing's changed. He's in the same spot right here. So looking at the matchup of Mike Brown, LeBron's former coach, and Ty Lue, and then LeBron himself, how much is that a factor? Because have you noticed, Dave, at least a huge change between Mike Brown and Steve Kerr from the Spurs series and the Jazz series prior to this? Have you noticed a huge, drastic change in the way that Mike Brown and Steve Kerr have coached? Or is it just more of something where Steve Kerr is more of this reassuring face? Or have you noticed anything
crazily different? I'm happy you brought that up, because there is a little bit of a difference between the two. Steve Kerr commands a different presence than Mike Brown does. Mm-hmm. Mike Brown feels like he fits in with he's a player's coach. He's more of one of the guys. And I feel like on the sideline, he kind of lets things get he lets them play their game. And he tries to, only when needed, step in. And that's, you know, he learned that from LeBron. Like, when he was coaching LeBron, it was like, I know my role. I know I only have to do this much to get there. So I'm going to let you guys take care of everything you guys already know. And I'll just be here for the little reminders. The little just, hey, think about this when you guys are doing a switch. Think about this when you're setting a screen kind of thing. The problem is that we saw the struggles early on against San Antonio when Kawhi was out there. And he didn't have an answer for it. And it makes you start to question, like, when he comes up against a problem that people on the court can't solve for you, like, how are you going to outcoach that moment? And I do have questions about that.
And Ricky, I'm going to go to you now because, you know, Dave talking about that, looking at Mike Brown, you know, mentioning, I think he brought up a great point when he said, you know, letting the players do their own work. But when you run into a problem, it's really that adjustment. So looking at the Warriors, it pretty much is when all systems are go, this is the best team we've ever seen on the floor. One of the best teams we ever saw, because I know they'll bring up the Bulls. One of the best teams we've ever saw. But then, you know, when we see the struggles, when we see Steph Curry and Klay Thompson's struggles at the end of the finals last year, where they were just, you know, I know Steph was wobbled up, and, you know, how Dave mentioned that Kawhi's like the most hot and cold player in the NBA. Yeah. Oh, Klay. I'm sorry. Not about to say Kawhi?
Yeah.
Fucked up.
It's all good.
Anyways, Klay, how he's so hot and cold. Looking at this, is it that big of a difference? Because we know that on paper, at least on the floor, Warriors have the best five. But Is it more of they have the best five, but then you have a better coach and you know who gets along better with his players, at least with Ty Lue on the floor? So is it that big of an advantage that it might balance the scales just a little bit?
Well, and that's why I'm going to answer this by going back to a question that you recently asked. The most important player to me in this series is Kevin Durant.
Okay.
Because going back to that game one that we saw in the Western Conference Finals, yeah, I know it was right after Kawhi came out, but for most of that second half, most of that third quarter, Steph Curry was on the bench, and the trainers were working on Steph Curry, and you had, I want to say it was Mark Jackson and Van Gundy going, hey, what is he doing? Like, he's walking over there. Is he going to get back out there? Meanwhile, while they're doing that, who's taking over the game for the Warriors? It's Kevin Durant. And to me, Kevin Durant needs to be that guy if Steph Curry and Klay Thompson fall back and get cold. He needs to be the constant. And I think that it's the one thing the Cavs are going to have a little hard time adjusting to me, defensive matchups. Because, of course, Kyrie is going to be put on Steph Curry. And LeBron, you can put him on Draymond or either on Durant. I would start him on Durant and put Tristan Thompson on Draymond. But then it's one of those things, okay, with Klay, who are you going to, like, is J.R. Smith going to be that lockdown defender against a Klay Thompson?
Where are you putting Kevin Love?
Kevin Love, then. Kevin Love,
Kevin Love on Zaza. He's taking a breakdown,
I completely forgot about Kevin Love.
Actually,
Kevin Love or Tristan on Draymond.
Because
Tristan's a bigger body, though.
He's a bigger body. And if you put Kevin Love on Zaza to follow through with the pick and roll screens, like, honestly, that's not. I know.
I just thought it was funny because he just lose Caleb.
Yeah. I know he forgot about Caleb.
No. He was like, so much.
This wasn't like that. He wasn't like, oh,
you don't know.
This
I can't say that.
No. Yeah. Looking at Caleb, I think at least a dark horse on this team is Caleb. At least for me. I know this wasn't the question. I'm just bringing this up. But Caleb is probably the biggest dark horse on and any of the teams because we know the top four for the Warriors. We know that you know Klay when he's on, he's unreal. He's just lights out. Steph Curry can hit from anywhere on the floor. Great floor general. You look at Draymond Green, fantastic player, just all around on both sides of the court.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant, one of the most unstoppable scorers. And then Zaza is going to give you at least a big body. And he might grab some boards. He's not going to do anything crazy. You look at the Cavs right here. You know, JR can get hot. He can be a microwave and he can be decent defensively. Kyrie can be the hottest player on the floor, but then you know you're still going to get around 25 from a night. You know, LeBron's going to be the best player on the court no matter what. LeBron's going to be able to facilitate, rebound, dominate on both sides of the floor. You look at Tristan Thompson. He provides a lot of energy, offensive rebounds, defensive boards. But then you look at K-Love. He's a player that can put up 6 points a night and 6 rebounds, or he can be that monster that we saw in game 4 of 17 and 17. So I think you look at
K-Love.
That's going
to be the biggest difference from the Celtics series to this one. When he's on offense, who's going to be in his face? Draymond.
Well, that's the thing that I'm just looking at is, you look at K-Love and that's why he's the X factor, because at least he can take the best defender out of the situation. He can take the best
defender.
He's
also not going to have wide open looks like the Celtics were like, here's a wide open look.
And one thing that might change too is, maybe you see Draymond play a little bit on LeBron and then KD goes on Kevin Durant, which might give at least Kevin Love the body size there, which is going to be an interesting factor. It's just really how is K-Love going to respond? Are we going to get Game 7 K-Love where he dominates the boards? I'm saying last year's Game 7 where he dominates the boards. Or are we just going to get shy Kevin Love like from Game 2?
Stand in the corner. Right? Well,
he didn't play Game
shots.
2 last year. Yeah, I mean
I know where you're going with that.
I mean, K-Love can be a quiet, just little church mouse, or he could be a huge presence on the floor.
Church mouse.
Yeah, you need to get a little bit of the old Minnesota Timberwolves, K-Love back.
You need to go 2020, K-Love. But looking at this, I think he's the biggest X factor. Dave, real quick, who is the most important player on the Warriors? Because you touched on Mike Brown. Is it Steph because he is at least the floor general? Is it KD like Ricky mentioned? Is it Draymond because he can do everything? What is really the most important player?
I mean, probably JaVale McGee, we can all agree, is the most important player.
The war,
I'd say so.
No. Personally, for me, I think it is Steph Curry. And it feels almost like a cop-out, but what he can do offensively, it's something else. I mean, he can pull up from anywhere inside a half court and make a shot, and he's confident about it. So it's a dangerous level of three-point shooting, coupled with the fact that he has such a creative mind as far as passing lanes are concerned, and he always thinks he can just stretch out a little bit further one way or the other and get the ball to you. Sometimes it does lead to some sloppy turnovers, But, you know, it's the game they play, and I think that the team as a whole trusts him and trusts his decision-making.
Well, I think we talked a little bit about starting lineups. I think, you know, on paper, easily the Warriors. I mean, they have the best four players in NBA history on one team. You look at the coaching matchup. We touched upon that. You got Mike Brown on the Warriors' side, and we're a little bit iffy on his defensive matchups, and how can you really adjust when this team's facing pressure? Ty Lue has done that with this team before, even though he took away, you know, he hasn't been coached for too long of the Cavs. But, you know, winning a championship last year, going through the 3-1 comeback last year. So Ty Lue gets the advantage there in the coaching department. Also having LeBron on your side doesn't help, or doesn't hurt you there. And then
it doesn't help at all.
Doesn't help at all. LeBron sucks. But then looking at the bench, pretty much the last frontier. We know about Chandre Livadala, the best six man in the
honestly,
world.
Honestly, though, like,
but that's what I wanted to mention.
It's been a little disappointing.
The Cavs have the better bench in my mind.
You think so? Because you look at Kyle Korver, you look at Channing Frye, you look at Darren Williams, all these players on the bench. Do you think
the first and the third person you mentioned are the two that I look at that have to help? They have to find ways to help this team, because we've seen it already with D. Will, who, first off, I got to congratulate him because in his whole NBA career, former Illini, finally gets to the finals.
Hopefully he doesn't pull 2005 and lose against Sean May.
I'm rooting for the Warriors, so I wouldn't mind that. But if he won, I'd be happy for the former Fighting Illini. But he needs to be important and pick his spots, because we've seen a little bit in the game where LeBron was sick and he ran the point. But also when earlier in the playoffs, when Ty Lue went to that kind of second lineup with LeBron, where it's like, you know what, Kyrie, K-Love, you guys are on the bench, and he threw D. Will out there to work and be that key piece in that kind of a lineup. And then Kyle Korver, he's got to be a microwave. He's got to go off from beyond the arc, because if he can shoot, like I mentioned earlier, if he can shoot threes, that's going to help neutralize any, like if he hits 5-6 threes in a game, that's going to just neutralize any threes that the Steph Curry or Klay Thompson hits, because we know the Warriors are going to jack up threes.
Dave, do you agree that with Ricky that the Cavs have a better bunch?
I do. It's been really kind of a disappointing.
Even with JaVale McGee?
JaVale McGee takes them to like here. They're close. They're close, though. Look, I like the Cavs bench, and I like the fact that they've kind of taken, you know, their play style on a pivot in one season. And after watching the finals last year and understanding the value in the three, they've refocused their entire bench to be 3 and D.
Well, LeBron refocused it.
And that's the thing, too.
3 and the attempt at D when it comes to Korver.
Is that people bring up that the Cavs have built this to beat the Warriors.
So LeBron has built
this. They're now out shooting three-pointers. They're better at the three ball than the Warriors are currently.
At least it's percentage-wise.
Percentage-wise. Yes. It's crazy, though, to think about that with a team that Steph Curry is going to be the all-time greatest three-point shooter. Klay Thompson's not going to be too far behind. And Kevin Durant score from anywhere, but
Draymond can even shoot threes.
Yeah, I mean it's freakish.
Like 7 of 7 in that game 7.
The disappointing thing is, you know, Iguodala is pretty much done at this point. He can't give you much anymore. Livingston's still efficient in a short amount of time on the court, which is good. But like, it's really kind of gone back to, you need to keep one of those four amazing starters on the court at all times.
It's going to be KD.
It's a balance, and you can run iso ball with KD to compensate for that lack of bench scoring.
Well, and the one thing, too, is I think we'll get to this a little bit when we give our predictions, but do you think that, and I agree with you guys, you know, you look at Kyle Korver, you look at Iman Shumpert, Darren Williams, Channing Frye, Richard Jefferson, who was huge last year, hasn't played a ton of minutes.
Really, this year, though, the one thing I want to say about Richard Jefferson, and I love his Snapchat because he's a funny guy, this year has kind of felt like the kind of not retirement tour, but the I'm just gonna sit here and maybe we'll get a championship kind of a season.
Yeah. I mean, he's Jefferson. He's 36 years old. I mean, you're not expecting a lot from
him. He's kind of begged to come back at the parade and said, oh, fuck it, why not?
Yeah. but again, looking at this, I don't disagree with you. Again, you saw the early spurts of when Kyle Korver first came over, shooting above 50% from three. If he can do that and LeBron can space the floor and he can get those open shots, I mean, that's going to be a huge difference maker there. But then, again, what I want to bring up is this signing of KD. Could the signing of KD, weirdly enough, hurt the Warriors because this bench isn't as deep? You don't have Leandro Barbosa. You don't have all these players to rely on beyond Chandre Livadala. You don't have all these players behind him. So do you think the signing of KD will either help the Warriors get over, and this is where I'm asking you guys, who's going to win the finals and when? Do you think that the signing of KD will help them overcome the Cavs this time?
It's definitely going to help. Like, I don't think we look back, no matter what the outcome is, I don't look back and go, man, If the Warriors had never signed KD, man, they would have won the finals. However, the one thing that I think of is this going to put a little bit more pressure on the Warriors? Because it's like, okay, this is what you made the signing for.
Yeah.
You made it to win to make you not only the best team on paper, but to win the NBA Finals. And with Kevin Durant, pressure individually of, okay, big boy, this is why you made the move. You made the move here because you felt like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and this team was going to help you win a title. If you don't win a title, kind of feels wasted in a way.
Well, why are they going to win a title?
Kind of feels wasted if they don't win a title.
Are they going to win a title?
KD. Yeah. I have the Warriors, and I'm going to go six.
And who's going to be your finals MVP?
My finals MVP will be Kevin Durant.
All right, so you think he's going to step up. Dave, looking at all this, who's going to win the finals, how many games, and who's your finals MVP?
God, I want to just waffle on this thing for like another week or so to think about, because...
Well, we don't have a week.
I know.
June 1st is coming up.
Ideally, I'd like to wait for Stephen A. to make his pick.
He already has. He's picked the Cavaliers.
Thank God. Warriors are winning.
Yep. It's pretty much locked in.
Who's taking?
I do have the Warriors winning. I want a good series, though, so I'm going to say six games. And
Said 6-2.
Not going to say seven.
Yeah, but the last time I said six, it was like, oh, that's done in four. Oh, that's done in four. I say five games. Oh, that's done in four.
Not going to say seven. It's just,
I hope it doesn't continue with their curse of like every team they play is somebody out and the other team goes down. Like, that'd be super, super disappointing. So. Honestly, like I've got the Warriors in six, but I've got LeBron James MVP.
Well, one thing I want to mention is who would the injury bug hurt the most? Because we see that Kyrie twisted his ankle there.
I think Kyrie. I mean, K-Love's back is big, but
even
like,
on the Warriors side, because we saw that Steph last year bummed ankle and he was nothing in those last three or four games. I mean, like, so do you think that an injury to the big four of the Warriors would hurt more, or do you think an injury to Kyrie or K-Love would hurt more?
Injury
for the Cavs?
To the Cavs would hurt more
if you took out Kyrie Irving. That would be a
Steph Curry
dramatically different team.
Curry, like, I love D. Will, but his defense on Steph Curry would not be anywhere near Kyrie Irving.
But then you say you take out Steph, then who's going to guard Kyrie? Then, you know, you look at that, and then is Klay Thompson going to be hot or cold? And then you look at Kevin Durant. Is he going to be able to handle all this pressure up against LeBron James? I think it's just, you know, I'm just throwing out the question. I'm going to go with what got me a ton of views last time. And we got a ton of hate. And Ricky throwing headsets. Cavs in seven. LeBron's the finals MVP because he's the best damn player in the world.
I've actually got one question for you.
Yes,
what's that? And this has to go with Kevin Durant. Now, I'm going to phrase this, and I'm going to expect Sean to be his special guru and kind of understand what I'm trying to say, because I'm trying in my head to kind of word this question. Do you think with this finals, because we mentioned KD and I mentioned how there might be a little bit of pressure on him to win this, and I know it was a different team the last time he went to the finals against LeBron. Do you think if he wins the finals, we look at it and it's kind of like a knock against Harden? I know Harden was a different player, but Harden and Russ, where it's like, yeah, he couldn't win a title with you, but then he came and won a title with the Golden State Warriors and needed that much better talent around him to beat LeBron.
So is it a knock on Kevin
KD?
Durant?
Is it a knock on, do we look at it, not us, but more so like KD, more of a knock on Russ and Harden, where it's like, yeah, with you guys I couldn't win, with these guys I could.
No, because Harden's a completely different player than he was on OKC. He was he was more of a 3-and-D player there. Now he's an all-around point guard, and it's completely different there. You look at Russ, I think it's more interesting to look at Russ, but at the end of the game, you look at the team around KD compared to the team that was around Russ and KD back then, who almost beat him. The Warriors had to come back 3-1-2. Then, I mean, you look at that, the team around KD and Russ back not a lot there.
I'm talking about going back further when they played LeBron in the finals.
Yeah, what I'm saying is Harden's completely different.
I think it's
not the same
more of a knock on KD then, wouldn't you say? Like the fact that he couldn't take his team over LeBron, but, you know, you go
but
to
now he could.
What is the best team on paper that has ever been assembled?
I don't think it's a knock on any. I don't think it's a knock on anybody because the knocks came when KD signed. Well, you're ruining the NBA. I think that's the one thing where it's not a knock on Harden or Russ, because we know the struggles that Russ and KD had together playing together. But then you look at Harden. Harden's completely different than when he was in 2012. So I think that's it's not really a knock on anybody. My knocks came all to KD when he signed, and I think it's still a bullshit signing. But anyways, I think I got the Cavs in seven. LeBron's the Finals MVP. Tell us who you think is going to be the Finals MVP. Tell us who you got winning in how many games. It should be fun. Ricky and I know we had a lot of fun watching these games last year. We're going to continue it. We're going to bring Dave in the mix this time. Mm-hmm. It should be fun. So tell us who you think is going to win the Finals in the comments down below and how many games. But let's move on to the Spurs and the possibility of them bringing in Chris Paul. You look at this. Mark Stein was not fired from ESPN. Mm-hmm. He wrote, sources, Clippers regard Spurs as the legitimate threat to sign Chris Paul. San Antonio's are exploring the feasibility of making a free agent run at all-star point guard Chris Paul. League sources told ESPN. So looking at this, there's a lot of cap moves that need to be made. So let me get into it first before this all happens, because a lot needs to be made.
Thank you, Sean.
The max offer that the Spurs can make Chris Paul is 4 years, $152 million. The Clippers can probably offer up something around 5 years, $210 million, with the way that new CBA has been restructured. But that also might be different because of certain contract trade clauses and all that is in CP3's contract. But then looking at this is what they need to offer a max deal to Chris Paul. They need to renounce the rights to Manu Ginobili, Patty Mills, Jonathan Simmons, as well as potential free agents of Dwayne Dedmon and David Lee. And they would also face complications and decisions on Tony Parker and then possibly Paul Gasol and Danny Green. And also there's the possibility of them possibly moving LaMarcus Aldridge's contract if Powell resigns, because Powell does have a player option. So a lot needs to happen for this to happen. But it really, we're not really going to phrase this as should the Spurs sign CP3, because I think we're all in agreement.
Mm-hmm. Hell, you have a chance.
Yeah, you should definitely try to do that. I was going to say, fuck yeah, but I went with the more PC thing of hell yeah. looking at this, CP3 would make the Spurs a much better team. We all know that. I mean, you look at Tony Parker, he was fantastic in the playoffs, and he was pretty good this regular season, but you see the injury that he suffered during the playoffs, looks old, he's getting older, not getting any younger. You look at Patty Mills, he's going to want a bigger contract, so you're going to have to put a lot into him, but then if you get a massive upgrade in CP3, possibly the best point guard that San Antonio's ever seen, that would be something that completely changed the game and, you know, put a threat towards the Warriors. So it's really the question of, will CP3 sign with the Spurs? Because there's a lot to go into it. And then also, CP3 will have to take less money and then think that San Antonio is a better option than Los Angeles. So looking at this, Ricky, do you think that CP3 will end up signing with the Spurs?
I would say yes. And the reason why is, even if, let's say, the Clippers go, you know what, come on and stay, Blake's coming back, you can come back, we're going to put together a team, I would look Doc Rivers in the face and go, no, we're not, because you have proven that you can't do both head coach and lead the basketball operations, because this team, like you even mentioned before we started recording the segment of, well, yeah, Ricky, you had them in the Western Conference Finals. Yeah, and then I was blatantly wrong because they were a horrible team this year. And by horrible, I mean they didn't live up to potential.
A lot of injuries. CP3 got injured. Blake got injured.
And I know you can say that, but at the same time, I kind of look at it and go, it's kind of an excuse for this team, because obviously Doc Rivers is in over his head on the basketball operations side. I would say head coach, we'll get someone else for the operation side. But for the Spurs, I think CP3 should be more than willing to come to the Spurs, because you look at this team, and the big thing I look at is, from what you said, the most interesting part is where you're like, oh yeah, they're thinking about moving LaMarcus Aldridge. And to me, that's one where I look at that and go, yeah, go ahead and do that. Because the biggest thing, what was the biggest thing we saw in the Western Conference Finals when Kawhi went out? What was Pop saying about LaMarcus? Oh, he needs to basically take over the game.
Yep.
He can't be secondary and be waiting for shots. He's got to get going right away. Well, guess who's not going to be that passive? CP3. So if I'm CP3, I'm going, hey, you know what? I'm not going to be able to win a title with the Clippers. Do I want the money or do I want the titles? Let's be honest. You want the titles, go to the Spurs.
It's a bold call, Ricky. I sort of agree with you in principle about, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge being an easier asset to move, or maybe a more possible one to move realistically. But Chris Paul, you know, as the head of the Players Association for the NBA, like, he and LeBron kind of crafted that new CBA to ensure that they would get another contract after this one.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is the reason why that he would take the jump right now to the Spurs, because the window has really closed on this Clippers team and closed hard with injuries. And with Chris Paul, the last couple of years, 74 games and 61 games respectively. And then you look at Blake Griffin and his injuries. I mean, he 67, 35, 61. Like, those, you can't build championships around players who are injured year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And having someone as reliable, I know Kawhi just went out with an injury, but like, different levels of injury.
That was, let's yeah, be completely he got stepped honest. On. Yeah. And that was, you know, whether you want to say it was dirty or, right. You know, a complete accident, it was, it looked like an accident, or there was some ways you could see it as an accident.
Right, right. And the point is, like, I would put my faith into, I'm going to go for the ring at this point because mm-hmm. I have one more shot at a big contract. I have faith in yourself on that end. And then know that, look, this Clippers team could just completely blow up during this offseason. I could easily see JJ being gone. I could see Blake Griffin. He's probably going to say he's still there, like, mm-hmm. centerpiece. But like, yeah. There's a lot of questions around this team and what they're going to do. And just be realistic with yourself and be like, how am I going to get over the Warriors? Because that's the only question. And if you watched what happened with the Spurs team this year, you go, yeah, if I was out there and healthy.
With Kawhi. With a healthy Kawhi. Leonard, Kawhi.
Like, I don't see any reason they couldn't put up a solid fight against them.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that you could have two super teams out there in San Antonio, because I don't think Los Angeles is a current super team. I mean, you look at Blake Griffin, I think he's completely overrated. DeAndre Jordan's a fantastic player, and I think he would do exactly what he's doing, but it's completely heightened with the addition of Chris Paul, because he's going to make those lanes more open.
He's half of Lob City.
Yeah, I know. Chris Paul's a fantastic playmaker, and DeAndre Jordan would thrive on different NBA teams. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Jordan, I don't know if he was an all-pro on different NBA teams.
I think he's kicking himself for not going to Dallas, even though Dallas was worse than LA.
I don't know about that. He's still got it paid in LA.
Yeah, he's getting paid, but we'll see. CP3 is going to be gone.
He's the guy who I think his functionality is completely based off of him being in the right system. I think him in a different system would easily disappear. Like, mm-hmm. we wouldn't see the level of impact that he puts out in LA if we dropped him onto like Utah or like the
with
Timberwolves.
With Utah, he might be
like,
able to do it.
Like, he needs to land in the right system with the right guys around him, because otherwise he just turns into like a better Tyson Chandler.
Tyson Chandler was really good.
He was all right.
Tyson Chandler was Defensive Player of the Year a couple times.
Yeah, way back, though. I'm talking like right now.
No, DeAndre Jordan's better than Tyson Chandler right now.
And that is what I said. He's a better version of Tyson Chandler.
I disagree with that. Anyways, I don't know why we got to there.
That's a shocker. We have a disagreement. Man,
looking at this, Chris Paul, they're not a super team, is mm-hmm. what I was trying to get to. And Chris Paul going to San Antonio would create super teams, a super team, or at least two super teams in the West. You have Chris Paul at least the point guard. If Danny Green's able to stay back with this crazy contract situation that the Spurs would be put in having to sign Chris Paul, maybe it'll be a mess. But then you
would
have Chris
Paul.
Would
they have to, though? And the question I want to pose out there is, of course, like, everyone's expecting that, oh, if CP3 moves, he's going to maximize and want the most years and the most money that he can get. But do you think there's an option? Maybe CP3 looks at, because one of the things we've talked about is Team Banana Boat.
Mm-hmm.
Does he look at it and go, well, you know, LeBron's kind of locked up for maybe 2 years at the most with the Cavs before he's an unrestricted free agent? You know what? I'll take a 2-year deal, and then me and LeBron will become unrestricted free agents at the same time. Mm-mm. To put Team Banana Boat together.
I think with the way that, you know, like Dave was mentioning, this is the last chance or one of the last chances you can have it at a big contract, mm-hmm. and with the way that injuries can't happen, with the way that, like Dave said, 74 games and 61 games that Chris Paul has played in the last two seasons. You know, his body's not breaking down, but it could break at any moment. And he's 32 years old. He'd be 36 when the 4-year deal ended up, or if he sent a 5-year deal, he'd be 37. So looking at this, I don't think this is going to be something where he's going to take less than the max. He's going to take the max anywhere he goes, whether it's Los Angeles, whether it's San Antonio. And looking at what that would create is at the two super teams, you have Chris Paul, Danny Green possibly, Kawhi. At the power forward position, you would have LaMarcus Aldridge, I guess, and then or at the center position, you have LaMarcus Aldridge. And then at that power forward, you're probably going to have to put a bum there because you don't have...
Yeah, they'll find someone, though. That's the thing. Like,
yeah.
Come on, this is the Spurs. They'll pull up somebody from the D-League, and they'll just shine like a star.
You look at Dwayne Dedman. He was fantastic throughout this whole season. David Lee was...
somebody's going to give him money. Yeah, he had a resurgence.
Yeah, and then Powell would obviously... I think he would have to be gone for them to be able to sign.
Otherwise, he'd have to take way less money. He's got no incentive to do that.
Yeah, so he would have to, you know, take less money. So at least you look at the four right there of Danny Green, Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, and LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't know if it's on the super team level of KD, Steph, Clay, and Draymond, but it's still pretty fucking
I think,
good.
I think matchup-wise, they did keep up, though. That's the thing, mm-hmm. and that's all you really need to do, because who knows what happens every year. We watched it again this year, and it was how many guys went down with injuries in these playoffs, and it was just one after the other after the other. So really, I mean, the biggest thing is get to the playoffs, be healthy, and you don't know what's going to happen as far as the player health, but if you know that you can give them a fair fight for their money, like the San Antonio team, like honestly, probably would have taken the Warriors to 6 or 7 if Kawhi was healthy.
Yeah.
So if you're telling me we're going to lose a little bit of bench depth, but we're going to gain Chris Paul, I mean, come on, what is not to love in that kind of a trade?
And taking all of that in, because, you know, we talk about the Spurs improving as a team, the Warriors at least not having a lot of bench. You're going to have, you know, three players in Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge going up against Steph, Clay, Draymond, and Kevin Durant. Which team would you favor, at least? And then we'll go back to the Spurs and Chris Paul. But what team would you favor? If those three are laid out and those four are laid out, who would you take in a 7-game series? Because you look, you know, at what Kawhi did.
I was going to say, I want to lead game. To Kawhi, and that's mm-hmm. and maybe I'm overhyping him, but like he's someone who, again, we talked about like with his growth in his career and how much he's changed the way he plays. He's grown a shot, and he's continued to get better and better. I honestly feel like he's, you know, like after LeBron, it's Kawhi and then Kevin Durant, and then it kind of like goes back and forth a little bit. But like, honestly, he's a guy who I could see taking over a series easily. So I'm going to say it's a flat even draw for me.
And Chris Paul can at least take up some of the slack offensively. And Chris Paul himself can even create more opportunities for LaMarcus Aldridge offensively.
Yeah, I mean, his passing ability with that Spurs system, that'd be something.
And you look at LaMarcus, I mean, at least Chris Paul defensively, one of the best defensive guards in the NBA. Ricky, who would you take? Would you still take the Warriors 4, or would you take the Spurs 3 that were coming up?
I would take the Warriors 4, because the one thing that I know we didn't mention in the finals preview when we mentioned it, but I feel like even if Kawhi finished that game and the Spurs mm-hmm. won game 1, Steve Kerr still working with the team, they would have made the adjustments and would have eventually won that series. Now, would it have been a better series? Maybe. Might have gone 6 or 7. But I feel like the Warriors still
Steve
would have
Kerr wasn't there.
Gotten off of... Well,
no,
he was still
saying,
working...
Like,
he's making phone calls.
No, he was even there at halftime. When they'd go in at halftime, he's talking to the team at the half. They would still make the adjustments. So I would still go with the Warriors. The one thing I think about, though, with this is because of all the moves that would have to happen... Do the Spurs have to make this move? Do they have to get CP3? Because there are lesser options out there, and the one that I'm looking at is Derrick Rose. And I know that that's one where it's like, well, Sean, you mentioned CP3 and mm-hmm. his body might break down as he gets older.
Derrick Rose has broken down.
He's only 28. However, if you can get him for less and keep a little bit more of those reserves, I kind of feel like the Spurs might be at more of a disadvantage than the Warriors, than if it's like, well, screw it, we're going away from bench depth and we're going to go all in on CP3.
D Rose is taking the most money as can. If he can get a max, he's going to get a max. He's not going to get a max.
That's what I'm saying. He's not going to take less money.
Yeah. He's not going to take a 1-year contract. He's going to take as much money as he possibly can, because that car can break down fully. Mm-hmm. I mean, that car can just be done at any second. I think that's an interesting point that you bring up, though, because then you look at a guy like Drew Holiday. I don't know if Drew Holiday would offer at least warrant max money on the market there. I mean,
if he gave you enough games, again, another injury-prone guard. But
then again, you look at Drew Holiday, and he was he's a great facilitator. He's good defensively, not as good as Chris Paul. And then, like Ricky mentioned, at least you're not going to drain yourself defensively and depth-wise mm-hmm. looking at this team. So I think it's interesting, but then again, I think you have to make a move. You can't be stagnant if you're the Spurs.
They're going to take a shot. I mean, even somebody we talked about, Lowry, being a possibility.
Yeah.
And they're going to take a shot, and I think the biggest problem here is they're stuck in a bad financial place because of Paul Gasol kind of controlling them. So if they can, like, Jedi mind trick him into opting out.
I was going to say, what might be a blessing in disguise is if Paul go ahead and if he says, you know what, I'm going to take that player option and come back, because then it forces you to move that LaMarcus Aldridge contract.
Well, it doesn't
contract.
Force you. It just makes you stagnant.
If you want CP3, you're going to move LaMarcus Aldridge.
That's what I want to mention, though, is what would you rather have, CP3 or LaMarcus Aldridge? If it came down to that, would you rather
CP3 and signing him?
Can I finish it? CP3 and signing him or moving LaMarcus Aldridge? Why would you rather have CP3?
It's what I saw in the Western Conference Finals. LaMarcus Aldridge, I know you could be saying, well, Ricky, you're putting a microscope over this one thing, but when Kawhi went down and they needed LaMarcus Aldridge to step up, he didn't. And I don't have that worry with CP3. CP3, even if Kawhi goes down, even if a Tony Parker goes down, CP3 is going to say, okay, guys, huddle around. This is on me. And he's going to lead that team. LaMarcus Aldridge isn't, to me, is not that guy.
Well, do you think it's different just because of the positions they play, though? I mean, it's tough to say that as a power forward.
The point guard is one of those things where it's like you are the team, but if you're a vet on that team, I feel like you should be able to, well, Kawhi's not out there, it's on me. And I look at
You still have one of the best coaches and Manu on that team.
And I look at one of the things with where they are in their draft position. If they're able to trade LaMarcus, get CP3, for a year I know that you're saying, well, Ricky, you're going to put a lot of stock in a rookie. You could have kind of a two-man platoon at that position of Paw, and then either right now I'm looking at Tankathon, any of the power forwards they could take, Bam, who's currently mocked to him, they can go with Swanigan or they can go with Jordan Bell. That's the top three power forwards that would be available for him at 29. So you can go ahead, take a power forward there and just put a 1-2 of like, okay, Powell's our starter at power forward and the rookie's right behind him.
It's interesting to bring up, Dave. Would you go CP3 or would you go LaMarcus, a guy that's been playing in your system, or would you rather, you know, pretty much mortgage the farm on a 32-year-old?
Weirdly enough, I'm kind of leaning towards LaMarcus Aldridge. Point guard is a position that right now we have such an overflow of talented point guards where the difference between a top-tier point guard like Chris Paul and a middle-tier point guard somewhere like a Derrick Rose, Drew Holiday level, not that big of a difference. But as far as a power forward goes or someone who can tweener between power forward and center as LaMarcus Aldridge is, there's a hefty drop-off there. And I think you're being maybe overly critical of LaMarcus in that series because the Spurs offense was never designed to run through LaMarcus Aldridge. He's never been a focal point for them. So I feel like saying that he couldn't get it done, the system wasn't set for him to get it done. He did what he could, and I understand like he's done better in stints in the past.
Well,
but
it's like we saw him in that Rocket series even take over.
You can
over.
See
it's
him
like,
in bursts, yes.
It's one of those things where I just look at it and I go, why were you able to do it there, but you can't, like, I'm not saying like the actual performance. I'm talking about looking at him on the court. It looked like, dude, you don't have the same fire you had in that Rockets game where we saw you take over.
But then again, that's one game where you know Kawhi is going to come back. This is, you know, Kawhi's done, and it's something where you're looking at four of the greatest players in recent memory
and
to step
one of the
on
best
an
defenders
NBA court.
In the league.
Yeah, and you're looking
matched
at Draymond
up with
Green.
You spot on.
You're not looking at Ryan Anderson. So, I mean, I think it's completely different there. I would agree with Dave. Just I would rather go LaMarcus Aldridge, like you said. And then, again, talking about that draft position, we're talking about a guy that we talked about it before, at least underrated draft prospects. We've mocked Josh Hart to him. And it's something where we believe in Josh Hart. We saw that the impact of Malcolm Brogdon, at least I believe in Josh
Hart.
Well,
I mean, if they need
him.
A power forward,
well,
though.
What I would say is you look at Bam, he's a project. Jordan Bell is very athletic. You look at Swanigan, he's not going to be able to get up and down the court as fluid as you look. But you look at Josh Hart, a guy that has experience, 4 years in college. We look at the impact that Malcolm Brogdon had on the Bucks. You know, a guy very similar in the ways that they've come up. I know Brogdon was older when he came out. But you look at Josh Hart, a guy that went through, won a championship at Villanova, has been a guy that's consistently averaged points, but is not a guy that's just stuck only as an offensive weapon. He's a guy that's an all-around player. He can do both things offensively, defensively, is a decent shooter, can facilitate the ball. I would rather go with LaMarcus in that situation because he's also been a guy that has been in your system, and he's been a guy that's been playing with you. And I'm not saying that CP3 won't fit in the Spurs system. It won't fit with Popovich. I think that will you know work itself out. But then again, you look at what Popovich is able to do and what he's able to instill in guys that you know have no NBA experience. You look at Dwayne Dedman. I mean, the guy that was tossed around every single NBA team, and he lands on the Spurs, and you just see a growth in his game that's unreal. You look at Jonathan Simmons, a guy that again bounced up and back and forth between the D League. Pop really didn't believe in him, and once Pop put that belief in him, you know he really grew his game. Danny Green's a guy that's developed into a 3-and-D player and has consistently stayed in the NBA. But he's been a guy that you know was first on the Cleveland Cavaliers as a high draft pick, but really never fleshed out there. He goes to the Spurs and develops his game, and now he's playing some of the best ball he's ever played. So you look at what Spurs Pop's able to get out of the players and. You know, we know what you're going to get from CP3 every single night, but then you can get something where Josh Hart is a long-term solution at that point guard position, which would be interesting. You could always slide DeJounte Murray over to the two.
I say, DeJounte Murray's development this year has been something else, though. Like, for a guy who only played, like, 38 games, what we got to see out of him on at the end when he's under the spotlight, when he had the ball in his hands, like, there's a lot of hope there. I mean, he has the size,
but is he going
to
be one?
He needs to build up the muscle mass.
But is he going
to
be one where next year and maybe the next 2 years, you're saying, man, DeJounte Murray, we can beat the Warriors with him. And that's
No. You need someone there over him. And that's why I like Chris Paul would be like ideal case scenario. But you can go out and get a veteran guard to be your one and him on the bench or him at the two if, you know, Danny Green has to get moved for something. But like, I think they have confidence there. But I think they still, this year, you go for a one or two guard. And next year is supposed to be one of the better big man drafts. So why not wait it out one more year?
But then the question goes to, and this kind of goes back to what we talked about with the Celtics, and this is the final thing that I want to bring up, and then you guys can toss in your last and final remarks, is that, again, looking at the Warriors, and we talked about this with the Celtics, looking at the Warriors and looking at the Cavs and the window that they have, do you want to wait for that window to close? Because we look at Kawhi, he's not that old. He's a guy that's, you know, nearing 27 years old. He's nearing his prime, or what we think of prime of 27 to 31. Really hasn't hit that mark yet.
Yep.
He's growing still. I mean, we see the offensive uptake in his game, still one of the best defensive players in the world. You look at LaMarcus Aldridge's contract's going to come up as well. But then again, if you go out and get a guy that you think can develop in Josh Hart, DeJounte Murray, he can slide into your two guard. You have a guy, you know, a duo in Hart. And Murray in your backcourt, and then Kawhi Leonard's your focal point of that team. It's something that maybe you look at least past the Warriors, and you look when Steph's contract finally you know, comes up after this year, and they're going to have to pay him. You look at when Draymond's contract finally comes up, and Durant's contract finally comes up, and how are they going to keep that team together? It's really got to look at that, and do you want to just wait until that's gone, and then you could just go and rise up the ranks of the Western Conference? Because you still believe in Pop, you still believe in Kawhi. Kawhi's still going to be the best player in the Western Conference for a while, or at least one of the best players in the Western Conference for the next maybe, you know, 7 to 5 years. I mean, he's going to be one of the top players there. You just want to wait past that window.
And the reason why is, who's my head coach? Popovich. You could see during the Western Conference Finals when he said the line of like, yeah, you know, they gave up out there. They just didn't believe in themselves. I looked at him and was like, he is dead inside. Like, that killed him to say that and like be like, yeah, my team gave up out there. Because he's the kind of coach that he'll go out there. He doesn't give a crap if you're the Golden State Warriors. He's going to – and obviously you're going to say, well, Ricky's going to coach because he's going to coach every game to win it. But you have a head coach that isn't going to let you sit there and go, yeah, let's just wait for Golden State to basically fall apart contract-wise. No, they're going to go out there. They're going to try to get their guy. And if CP3, if you believe he is a guy that next year can bring you over the Warriors, you go ahead and do it.
Right. I think that's fair. The thing I kind of look to is, you know, how do I want to build my team and where's my window versus theirs? The two best teams in the league right now are the ones with, you know, overwhelming superstar talent and then fill in pieces on the bench. Not, you know, ideal bench players. Bench depth is what the Celtics had. And where did that get them?
Yeah.
You know, you get a bunch of goods, but not greats. You need great people in the NBA to take you to that next level. Mm-hmm. And I think that they need to go all in on this Chris Paul move because that's what it takes to compete. And I think that, like, everyone knows that Pop wants to compete, Kawhi wants to compete, and if the moves are there to be made, they're going to pull the trigger on it.
So the best case scenario is obviously Paul declining his player option, and you're able to keep Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Chris Paul and have that big three, right?
Yep.
And that's something that you just got to fill in depth.
In a perfect world, yes.
And yeah. That's what we're saying. Perfect world, that's what's going to happen. But again, we know that most likely will not happen because Pau Gasol is probably not going to turn down $6.2 million or whatever he's owed. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Spurs. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with CP3. I also don't think we touched enough on you know, whether you know, San Antonio is better than Los Angeles, but I think we all agree that San Antonio is better than Los Angeles.
The door or the window?
I mean, it's
the window,
LA.
The door,
whatever
locked.
LA had, it's
the basement, the basement cellar, everything's locked.
The one last point I do want to throw out there, though, about the Spurs and CP3 and why – of course, this is the right move. Is Mono? He's even like, even at the end of that last game, that game four,
bar soap,
you kind of got the momentum that like, yep, this is probably the last one for him, and kind of just the last thing that I was thinking when Dave made the comment about the difference between a top end point guard and one that can do service compared to the power forward. I just look at the teams, just the ones, the final four teams that we saw in this playoffs, You look at their point guards with Boston having an asterisk because theirs got injured in the final series. Yeah. IT, Kyrie, well, but they've got LeBron there special, but they still got Kyrie Irving, Steph Curry, and Tony Parker. All of them have point guards that I'm going, yep, that's my number one.
Well, Tony Parker got injured, and also you don't know how he's going to come back as an injury as a 35-year-old. So exactly. That's the reason why we're asking
and
this question.
And CP3 would be an upgrade.
It's true. No one's doubting that. Mm-hmm. So that's a perfect way to end it. Tell us if you think CP3 is going to sign with the Spurs, if he's going to end up being a Spur. I think he'd look good in the black and silver out in San Antonio. But anyways, let's move on to the Los Angeles Lakers. Magic Johnson just recently came out and said Brandon Ingram is only untouchable player on the Lakers roster. And the question we're going to be posing is, how do the Lakers build around Brandon Ingram? Because obviously they have a lot of pieces there, but what are the pieces that are going to stay? What are the pieces that you think are going to go? What are the pieces you think are they going to come? We talked about Paul George, Lonzo Ball, possibly moving D'Angelo Russell, where Jordan Clarkson is going to go. Mm-hmm. So looking at all this, Ricky, who do you think is going to be around when the Lakers finally or hopefully should be making the playoffs? And who do you think is going to be gone looking at this whole Laker team?
The two observations I make from this statement are, number one, I think the first man out, per se, would be D'Angelo Russell. And the second thing that I think of is that unless Boston shocks us and says, nah, you know what, we want Lonzo Ball, that the Lakers are going to draft Lonzo Ball and make him the point guard to Brandon Ingram. And I mean, I'm no shock that Brandon Ingram's the only untouchable on this team because really, what else do you have? You have really? nobody that I'd look at and go, man, this guy is a real untouchable. Like the rest of them, I am in total agreement with Magic Johnson. Yeah, I want Brandon Ingram, the guy that we drafted last year. Whatever you guys want, make an offer. Show me how much you want him, and we'll make a deal.
But, I mean, at that point, like, where is your team going? I mean,
where are they going right now? This is a team that,
you've got four guys under the age of, like, 26 who all have pretty good talent, who are all drafted fairly high in the first round for a reason. And maybe they're still going to get their time to play.
Well, I mean, there are three players that are, I mean, you look at Julius Randle, Lonzo Ball, if you draft him, Brandon Ingram and D'Angelo Russell. Those guys are all under 22. And then you look at Jordan Clarkson, the guy was a second rounder. So, I mean, he's like the old man on that team. True. So, looking at that, Dave, like who do you think will be moving? Who do you think will be going when it's all said and done and we see the Lakers finally in the playoffs after all this?
Oh, God. I mean, that's hard, man. That's going to be a couple years away.
Honestly, how did they get there is what we're saying.
I don't know. I'm not a freaking magician. I'm going to pull out of my hat my hatred for Julius Randle then. I'll just go back on my laurels. I'll rest on my laurels here and be like, you know the guy who doesn't fit this team? It's Julius Randle. You know why? Because Paul George is going to be playing power forward for them. Makes sense.
He's playing power forward for him.
See, I agree with you there that Paul George is probably going to end up being a Laker, and I think you're going to end up having a roster.
I honestly think
you
can keep the rest of these guys, though.
Well, besides Julius Randle is what you're saying. I think the two pieces that will be moved, if any, I think Jordan Clarkson and then Julius Randle. I don't think D'Angelo Russell is going to end up being moved. I wouldn't be shocked if he did be if he was end up moved. But I look at the future LA Laker lineup to be Lonzo Ball at the one, D'Angelo Russell at the two, Brandon Ingram at the three. Then you look at Paul George as the four, and then five. You can either go with their boy Zubac. Or if they do trade Julius Randle and are able to get something, at least out of a pick, then you know maybe a future pick and that whoever they draft at that pick, because you look at their future and the future draft picks, there is none in LA. I mean, they pretty much all of them are gone. They don't have a first round pick after this year, because I think next year it goes to Philly, and the year after that it goes to Orlando or something like that. So you really can't rebuild through the draft anymore. So Lonzo Ball is pretty much gonna be your last draft pick. If they end up taking Lonzo Ball, it's pretty much gonna be your last draft pick that you can at least build on, and then you're gonna have to go at least to free agency or something like that.
And that's another reason why I feel like this is, there's two reasons why I feel Magic Johnson said this. Number one, when you think about it, Magic Johnson's coming in, and to me, if I was coming in, I have no loyalty to any of the guys on the roster, because let's be honest, I didn't draft you, I didn't sign you, I didn't pick you. But the thing with Brandon Ingram you got to think of is, who on this coaching staff in this organization did go ahead and pick him? Luke Walton was on here, and of course they're going to talk to Luke Walton because he's the one coaching the team, and they got to find players that'll fit his system. I think this is a move where the Lakers are basically saying, hey, you know what? Brandon Ingram's the only untouchable. if they can get some picks for that, then it's that's what I think this is. It's you look at it and it goes, we don't have our first next year because it goes to Philadelphia. We need to get some picks. Maybe if it's even just one, if we can move a Julius Randle, we can move either both him and Russell for a first. If we can get something to get a first-round pick next year, because this Laker team, you're trying to rebuild it, and like you said, unless something weird happens of, A, they don't feel like they want to make the pick for Lonzo, or if the Celtics go, hey, fuck it, we're going to go and pick Lonzo, they're most likely going to get Lonzo Ball. They will have Brandon Ingram. But next year, it's like, we don't get a first-round pick. We need one if we want to continue the build.
Well, and Dave, looking at all this, because yeah, it's kind of weird, because he said that they're untouchable, but should any of them be moved, really? Because you brought it up. It's really you really think Julius Randle should be the only one being moved, but is it more of Magic saying this because you know D'Angelo Russell could be moved, but we're not looking into it?
I feel like it's a message to the other owners in the league.
That they'll listen.
We're open to offers. Go ahead and toss something out there. We'll see what we can do. I mean, the biggest thing is, like you mentioned, Clarkson. Clarkson's on a great contract for the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. I think that's a ton of value to another team and to the Lakers. So you have some guy who's easily one of the better six men mm-hmm. in the league on a reasonable contract at 11 mil, 12 mil, 13 mil.
And you can use that as leverage.
Huge leverage.
In talks. Giving you someone that has a fucking good contract.
Yeah, the biggest problem is, you said free agency. Well, you know, Deng and Mozgov, enough said. Like, mm-hmm. they got screwed over there, and I don't know how they're going to recoup their losses with that. So, honestly, they might have to package some of our talented guys with a contract eater just to get some value back so they can go out and do something for agency. But I love the young core, and I really want to see them play out more, because it's one of those things where you're pulling the ripcord on year three, but you haven't even seen, you know, everything kind of come to
you're
full
still
bloom.
Yeah. Pieces.
And that's the thing. Yeah. Like I liked what I saw out of Brandon Ingram's first year. I mean, yeah, he's not the dominant scorer that people wrongly assumed he would be because of, you know, his size comparisons to someone like Kevin Durant. No, but he's a great, he has really good defensive skill. He's just got like a natural intuition for where to be as far as how to stop other people. But like, I think you just have to let these young guys play out and play together.
Going back to Brandon Ingram and the way you saw him grow, what's the next step in his game? Is it adding size, because we see the skinny,
it's bulking up,
tiny
yeah.
dog of him?
God damn you.
Tiny dog.
Just for reference, Dave, we were in between recording. He's like, did you guys know that Brandon Ingram's nickname was Tiny Dog? That's so adorable. It was pretty funny, just out of nowhere.
But thank you.
How
thank
does
you
Tiny Dog go into Big Dog?
TD.
How does he challenge Roman Reigns in his yard?
Brandon Ingram wants to be the top dog.
No, big dog. He's just pretty much gotta go on that like In-N-Out Burger diet pretty much, I think, all summer. Hit the gym a ton. That combination right there should not.
So the Chad Ochocinco diet of, yeah, I'm gonna eat a double cheeseburger, then run a 40.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much he just needs to work out a ton and eat more. I mean, that's I kind of weirdly didn't see him grow a ton throughout the year, yeah, as far as his size wise. I mean, basketball year, You're traveling a lot, and it's a lot of cardio. So guys usually end up losing a lot of weight during the year,
yeah,
from where they start off. So
he's
got to
get on that Dion Waiters diet.
Yes. Yes, he does.
So
I think he bulks up, and if he can get a more comfortable shot, because that he had it in short spurts, but it never looked like he was really comfortable with his motion, and it changed three different times that I noticed from the start to the end of the year.
That was the one thing I wanted to bring up, because we saw this guy as a shooter, as a scorer, mm-hmm, and you look at at least his three-point percentage, and you're like, yikes, at 29%. So
yeah,
is it something that maybe, you know, bringing in Alonzo Ball, bringing in a guy that can get you more open looks, getting a guy that can make you feel more comfortable, do you think that will help Brandon Ingram's progression more?
No, I mean, obviously, if you give anyone better looks, it's like the LeBron James effect. I mean, same with the Warriors, Steph Curry. It's anytime you have more ball movement, you're going to find the open shooter. You're going to create better shots for them. So bringing in someone like Lonzo Ball, who, yeah, is going to pull a little bit of attention his way, because I'm sure he'll come in the league as a rookie and draw plenty of attention on his own.
I mean, he could still go to the rim, Lonzo. He's not a great shooter, but he's still a good
athlete.
Yeah,
and he can still drop it from three. So, yeah. I mean, he has the potential to make great passes. And you set up Brandon Ingram for better looks. I mean, the problem this year was after they moved
Lou.
They really didn't have an offensive identity, and I feel like they're going to get into the swing of things. I think that as a team, they're going to, again, try to spread that out, get more towards a three-point shooting line again, because that just kind of seems like the motion of the NBA now. So I think we're gonna see some tweaks as far as his game is concerned, but as far as the entire Lakers team is concerned, I almost don't want to touch it, but I think Randall is the odd man out regardless.
So then, Ricky, looking at this, I mean, obviously, you know, Dave's talking about Randall. How does Lonzo and then Brandon, like, are Lonzo and Brandon Ingram the pieces then? And does D'Angelo Russell kind of get pushed to the side then?
That's in my mind. And it's because I'm not, when we're looking at kind of going back to what you started the entire segment on, is when you said when the Lakers get back to what we're assuming is what they want to, playoff runs, who's going to be there? I don't see D'Angelo Russell being a part of that.
No.
And the reason being is the one thing that you mentioned was you kind of thought out your starting five with PG-13 because he's going to come over in free agency. Well, we're just waiting on it.
Yeah.
And my starting five would actually be, I would go Lonzo at the one, PG-13 at the two, then Ingram, and then have either Randall or Nance at the four with Zubac at the five. I think that's what it becomes instead of having D'Angelo Russell and PG-13 at the four.
Dave, thoughts on PG-13 at the two?
I'm just going to say that, Ricky, I disagree with you respectfully, as much as I can, respectfully.
It would be weird seeing Paul George, who is that. I think Brandon Ingram is more of a fit there at the two, just because with his
either
speed,
or
with his length,
either or.
With his size, I think that might be a better
Let's
better
put
fit
it
there.
This way. The five that I just laid out, that's your starting five. Put them wherever you want.
So Randall, Zubac, PG-13, Ingram, and
Randall
Lonzo.
Or Nance, whichever one you like better, because I know that you two are divided on that.
Yeah. No, well, Dave just doesn't like Randall, and we both
I know
think,
Nance is a great
We both think Nance is not even – yeah, Nance
He's
is
a
player. Bench player. Yeah.
He's a role player.
I think ultimately you look at this and the way that this team's going to develop, it's going to be interesting to see who they take at 28 with that Rockets pick and where they go with that direction. If they do go power forward, try to, you know, add some more depth there. If they do go center, adding depth behind Zubac. Or if they
could
go shooting.
They could go shooting. I think that's fairly likely. I kind of like D'Lo moving over to the two. Mm-hmm. I think
he's a scorer.
He is, and it comes natural to him. And I feel like he tries to step up in this situation. He gets a little caught up with the game, but he's a young kid. Like, he'll learn to pace himself.
He feels like he's got a little rust into me. Like, he's got a lot of rust to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's D'Angelo Russell, like his actual name, but he's got a lot of hero ball in him.
I'm going to pose this out to you.
Yeah.
What if the Lakers go, and right now I'm looking at Tankathon, and they've got Jonathan Janae, I hope I said the name right, from France going.
Yeah, he's like 7 feet tall or something. He's crazy lengthy.
But the thing I look at, and this is all based on Tankathon's mock, the next shooting guard that they could take that would be available, a guy that you're really high on, a guy that you have given your Malcolm Brogdon award to.
Josh Hart wouldn't fit with that team.
Could they go in and say, you know what, we're gonna take Lonzo early, we're gonna take the shooting guard here, and then Julius Randle is the guy we're keeping. D'Lo's the one we're gonna move.
The only reason I like that is because of Josh Hart's defensive ability, but I don't think he's enough of a scorer to hide Lonzo's flaw scoring. And then you look at Brandon Ingram. Can he really develop into that scorer? I mean, we see the spurts, we see the ability, we see his ability to attack the basket, but is he going to be able to step into that? I think you got to go some part of scoring, whether that's down lower or shooting from the
Unless
outside.
Unless you're just waiting for PG-13 to sign, and boom, there's your scoring.
But then again, you can't rely on one guy. So it's going to be interesting to see where this Lakers teams go, where this Laker team go. Lakers team. Yeah, Lakers team go.
Well, Lakers team. I mean, the
Lakers,
Clippers are kind of like
but,
their D-League
team. But is it
team.
Lakers team go or Lakers team goes?
Lakers team goes.
Anyways, yeah. We're not going to get into grammar here. Final thing that I have to ask you, I said last year, 2 to 3 years, Lakers would be in the playoffs. Dave, over under 2 to 3 years.
I mean, I'll probably take 3 years, yeah. I think 3 is spot on still with me.
Ricky.
Depends on Lonzo's development. I'm going to go with a push as well at 3.
All right, fair enough. I'm iffy on the 2 to 3 years, to be honest with you. Tell us
you
when
think
you
it's
think
it's going to take longer.
Yeah, when Ooh. Tell us when you think the Lakers will end up making it to the NBA playoffs. I think our camera just died, but oh well. Where's the end of the video? So tell us where you think the Lakers are going to end up, and how long will it be until they make the playoffs? Also, don't forget to tell us who you think is going to win the NBA Finals and how many games, and also go down and mention about CP3 going to the Spurs if you think it's going to happen. If you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, thank you so much for giving us that download, helping us out over there. We really, really appreciate it. If you haven't checked out, go to blogtalkradio.com/thefastbreak. Also, if you're listening on YouTube, we had one of our biggest months in May, and we got to give a huge shout out to you guys. You guys are awesome. You guys rock. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. You guys are the best. We love doing this for you every single week. Thank you so much for listening. For Dave Oster, Ricky Whitmer, I'm Sean Anderson. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this MVP podcast. Follow us on Twitter @MostValuablePod for more great podcasts.